Hey, everybody, just want to get some plugs in before the show begins. This April 11th, Monday, April 11th at the Looking Glass Lounge will be You, Me, Them, Everybody Live, featuring Sean Peoples from Sockets Records, comedian Jessica Brodkin, a special set from Laughing Man, and music, like always, from Ian Walters. The following Monday, April 18th, once again at the Looking Glass Lounge, guests include Magna Nicasas from the Not For Tour Sky DC, comedian Tyler Snickson, and a special set from Star FK Radium. Later that week on Thursday, April 21st, I will be in Chicago for You, Me, Them, Everybody Midweekend Review, hosted by myself. Panelists include comedian Chad Briggs, Red Eye writer and blogger for Accidentally Sexy, Anna For Not, comedian Sean Flannery and host of Outside the Loop Radio, Mike Stevens. Easter Sunday, April 24th, we'll be at the Whistler, our first show at the Whistler for You, Me, Them, Everybody Live. Guests include Pitchfork News editor Amy Phillips, comedian Prescott Tolk, and a special set from Post Honeymoon. The following day, Monday, April 25th, we'll be back at the Hungry Brain for You, Me, Them, Everybody Live in Chicago, hosted by myself and Esmeralda Leone. Guests include Q101 DJ and author James Van Osdell, Chicagoist editor-in-chief Chuck Pseudo, comedian Dan Ronan, and a special set from Good Evening Music that night from Trevor McSpadden from the Hoyle Brothers. So come on out to all those if you're in Chicago and D.C. And finally, New York City at the end of the month, Saturday, April 30th, You, Me, Them, Everybody Live at Pete's Candy Store in Williamsburg. We're going to do the talk show there at midnight, and guests include, from The Daily Show, Wyatt Cenac. So it'd be awfully kind if you came out to all seven of those shows in three different cities. For more information on these shows and all the other shows that we do, go to the website, which you've gotten this podcast from, youmethemeverybody.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby, sitting in a very, very rainy Washington, D.C. apartment, speaking with
CJ Toledano.
CJ, where are you?
I'm in L.A. now.
How is L.A.?
Oh, boy, I love L.A.
Do you love L.A. like the song?
Just like the song, just like Randy Newman. Actually, we're roommates, me and Randy Newman, and we just talk about how much we love L.A. together.
What's your favorite Randy Newman song?
Of the two that I know, it would have to be...
Is it the one from Toy Story or I Love L.A.?
Yes, it would be the one that isn't true, which is... it's the one that is true, and that's the Toy Story one.
Okay.
What's that one? The You've Got a Friend in Me?
You've got a Friend in Me. Did you ever see Toy Story 3?
Yeah.
Does...
Oh my God.
I haven't seen 2 or 3.
Oh man.
Does it involve a holocaust of toys?
I guess.
Do a bunch of toys go into an oven?
I don't know if that's what it's called, but yeah, of a burning device for garbage.
I love that.
If you watch it, it's intense. You forget you're watching toys.
I will watch that movie now. I'm excited to see toys burn.
You should see it. Yeah, it's a good movie. I highly recommend it.
That's some cutting edge recommendations there, recommending any Pixar films. That's why you're a comic.
I am, yeah.
Speaking of being a comic, that's an awful segue. You just got back into LA this morning at 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
So you're quite tired still.
Yeah, I'm catching up now. I'm feeling better now. Now I'm just pretty much just laying around just being lazy. But okay. I think it's well deserved.
So you're living like your current roommate, Kevin Lee,
and yep.
Doing nothing, being awesome. Okay. Yep. I love Kevin Lee for the listener at home. Kevin Lee.
We all love Kevin. And he's in Chicago right now driving back to LA with his girlfriend.
Really?
Yeah, his girlfriend's moving out here.
Why is she doing that?
To be with Kevin.
Oh.
I don't want to speak for her, but I think she just wanted a change and... She wants a new place to live, and I don't blame her.
Who's Kevin's girlfriend?
Kelly.
Kelly what?
Minta.
Oh, Kelly Minta. Okay, she's the comic.
Yeah.
Why is that a secret?
I don't know. I didn't know if it was. No.
I
hesitate thinking about it.
I knew he was dating Kelly the last time I talked to him. I don't know if it was the same girlfriend. That's why I didn't want to say, is it Kelly?
Yeah.
No, she's a comic. If you're a comic and you're on Facebook and you say, I'm a comic, we can talk about you all we want. And
yeah.
I think that's fair. She's a nice woman.
Yeah, she's very cool.
Isn't she a librarian?
No longer is she a librarian since she got a job out here. I believe she's going to be designing a catalog or catalogs.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
So she moved out here with a job.
Wow.
The smart thing to do.
Unlike Kevin Lee, everybody. Well, you technically, you by the way, fuck Kevin Lee. I'm sick of that guy. You have kind of a job. You're an intern.
I'm an intern, yeah.
How much longer you're interning for Conan? How much longer is this internship?
I hope I'm done. I hope.
Why do you hope you're done, CJ?
Because I interviewed for a job that I want. And I mean, but if I don't get it and I'm still there, I'll only have about 2 or 3 more weeks at Conan.
So either way, April is your last month in LA, probably.
I wouldn't say in LA. I don't want to. Maybe, yeah, I'm not gonna say in LA. But at Conan for sure.
Will you miss it there?
No, probably not.
Is that only because you're not getting paid?
Yes. Okay. Absolutely. I'm a very career is what determines my happiness in whatever location besides Chicago, because I have all my friends there.
Do you want to be back in Chicago?
I do, but I
Could you not be in AIM or GChat right now?
I'm sorry, I got a text. That was a text.
You have a very loud text ring.
Yeah. Are you? Well, the phone was right by the computer.
iPhone 3 or iPhone 4?
iPhone 3, not even the 3GS, the one before that.
Oh, wow, that's sad.
It's real shitty.
Like the Conan show that you work for. No, that's not.
No. What was it? I would rather be in Chicago, but I also know that I wouldn't be getting the opportunities that I'm getting right now if I was in Chicago.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd be happy, but on a whole other level, a different level, not necessarily a higher level.
That's, well, you would probably be really high because a lot of our friends are very big drug addicts. You're friends with drug addicts. And also, you'd be busy tomorrow night because the Late Live show has their show tomorrow. So you'd be on stage versus behind the scenes in a television show.
Right. That is correct.
Where even you're probably going to. Did you guys make money on the Late Live show? You don't think, I don't want numbers, but like, was this essentially an internship? Okay.
We did, but it all gets. It all disappears into the production later on.
Yeah, of course. So it's like. It's not like you're taking classes at Second City. You're actually performing at Second City, and you're making enough to like put on the next show.
Right. Got it.
And you're friends with drug addicts. Back to our friends with drugs.
Yes. There are a lot of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you'd be doing the show. You have a great show coming up. Or not you, but the Late Live show is a great show coming up tomorrow. You have a Olympic gold medalist.
Yeah. Shawnee Davis.
Shawnee, that's going to be exciting because athletes are always great interviews. Have you had an athlete on the show yet?
Yeah, they haven't, or we haven't. I don't know what their plan is. I haven't seen this week's script, but I don't know. I think Joe Quazal is a very good interviewer.
Wait. When you say this week's script, what do you mean?
What they plan on doing, like if they have any plans for a segment with the guest.
How often do you incorporate the guest into a segment?
Almost every time. Just because, in the case of someone that is very boring coming on the show, it's a safe way to do it. And it's interesting. Like, people just don't – I mean, there are interesting people in Chicago, but you want to be able to use their fullest potential in entertaining the audience, you know?
That is a very polite way to say they're not funny.
Yes.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. So can we talk about your job interview? We won't say the name of what you're doing, but what were you interviewing for? What would you be doing if you get the job?
I was interviewing for a dream job, my dream job, and then is writing for a show, an actual writer.
You'd be a writer.
An actual writer, yes.
What would that entail?
That would entail every day coming in and contributing comedy for a living salary.
Okay. When you say writing for it, do you mean the monologue, the skits, the interviews, everything?
With this show like this, you're writing for essentially everything. There are focuses in monologue and in sketch. I was interviewing for what I later found out was for sketch.
Is that good or
great.
Bad?
It's great, yeah. I mean, I would be happy. I mean, that was actually brought up in the meeting. They were asking me if I'd rather be a monologue or a sketch person without me knowing that I was interviewing for sketch, and I had said sketch, and they were excited by that.
Oh, that's brilliant.
But it also, yeah, it was also a compliment in them saying that I was capable of both according to my packet. So
that is great. Let's go over two of the things you just mentioned here. Monologue versus sketch. Did you ever see the movie I Am Comic?
I skipped through it. I didn't like it, to be honest.
It wasn't that great, but there was one part where a journeyman comic is like, I'm no longer on the road. Now I'm working on monologue jokes. Did you see that part?
I didn't. Well, I think I did a little bit, but I wasn't really into it, or I don't know, I don't remember. That movie kind of turned me off.
Okay, it's very sad. It's a very sad movie. The reason why I ask is because do the monologue writers and the sketch writers, do they work in the same group? Is it just like two different teams and you have to be under the same umbrella? How does this work?
It's dependent on the shows. The two shows that I know for sure, they do work separately.
Well, let's talk about Conan. Let's talk just about Conan so we don't get in trouble for the other one.
Okay. Conan, yes, they work separately. They have separate meetings. They have separate deadlines. They all work. Monologue writers tend to stay in their offices for the majority of the day. But they also do have the opportunity to pitch sketches or sort of a longer piece within the monologue. But their main focus is, you know, taking the day's stories and churning out a certain amount of jokes. On Conan, from what I hear and from what I read, it's about the expectation is about 35 to 40 a day.
35 to 40 jokes per writer or per staff?
Writer.
And how many writers are on the show that are just monologues?
At Conan, there are, there's Brian Kiley, Berkeley Johnson, Josh Comers, Michael Gordon, Lori Kilmartin, and Rob Kuttner. So that's six.
So that's 180 jokes. And how many of them get used? 15, 20?
It all depends. 10? With Conan, he usually would pick around, I would say between 10 to 15.
Jesus Christ. So you can literally go weeks and contributing hundreds upon hundreds of jokes a month and never have a joke on the
air. Yeah, but I mean, I think per writer, like since they write so many jokes, like they'll get like everyone's going to have like their best joke get in.
Yeah.
With six writers contributing for a monologue that's, you know, 15 jokes deep.
Do they stockpile all the jokes that they don't use, like Joan Rivers does in her in the documentary about her, where there's just like card catalogs of like essentially timeless
jokes? I'm pretty sure. I don't know exactly what the process is, but I know they have a lot of assistants. Like they have monologue assistant Aaron Martin. She's a very nice person who works there. Like they have assistants per department, and they, I believe, store the information digitally.
And what's a monologue assistant do?
She runs. She gets premises, organizes the jokes to deliver to Conan himself. Does a lot of the organization. Like they email her, and then she gets it together. And if any changes happen, like if Conan wants jokes, more jokes on a certain topic, she'll let them know of that. And she heads up all the monologue interns.
How many monologue interns are there?
There's three.
What do the interns do?
They only search for premises, which is...
But the monologue, like most late night monologues, the premises seem to be today's news.
Correct.
Period. Mm-hmm. Am I right or wrong?
You're absolutely right. Like a lot of shows pride themselves, and I would think this is what you have to do in order to stay competitive and continue to get a good viewership is to have today's story strictly today.
Okay.
Like the bit.
So Charlie Sheen, Bill Clinton's affair. These are like the two of the greatest stories ever for late night.
Monica Lewinsky, that whole thing. Okay. Like OJ was huge.
Of course. So this is very interesting to me, by the way. I don't know if I think to the listener at home it is.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, this is a world that I was always interested in it before coming to a show, but now I have like the details, and I would say it's definitely helping me out in trying to pursue jobs.
Is this last episode we talked? It was you and Andrew Smirker, very nice man. We talked about the writing packet that you had people submit for the late live show. And then you also told me that your writing packet is actually more intensive than a lot of these late night
shows. Yeah, but did you have a question about that? Because I have something like kind of insightful for.
I do actually. Yeah. Tell me that your insightful thing, because it might already answer my question.
So in this meeting, a lot of these shows don't give, or they do sometimes, but a lot of them don't give you what they want, or what they're looking for in a packet. I, for this particular show, from working at Conan and seeing how much stuff is come up with in the different areas of writing that a writer contributes to, I ended up doing every segment. Like for this particular packet for this show, I wrote 60 monologue jokes. I wrote 10 sketches, 5 games. I wrote 10 guest segments and a desk piece. And
what's a desk piece?
Is like it's a joke heavy piece. It's a lot of the monologue writers write these as well, but it's like I would say, what's a good example? Like on Conan, they on late night they used to do actual items.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, sure, okay, yeah. That's a desk piece, but that's different than a sketch.
Yeah, it's like a joke based. Piece that's performed at a desk. So
like anything on Weekend Update's usually a desk.
Yeah,
piece.
Well, those are essentially monologue jokes, but like lists of sorts, like lists on a certain with a certain formula.
So you have 60 monologue jokes.
Yeah.
How often was that updated?
I got kind of lucky where I was getting the chance to submit to a bunch of shows at one time, so I was able to. Go back and forth or like use just the 60 on certain shows. And then for the one show that I submitted for that I went in for the interview recently, I wrote a ton more because I knew their voice more than any other show, and I had specific jokes for them to use on their show.
How important is it, do you think, to know the host's voice? Or does it matter?
I think
the
it's
run?
The most important thing, actually.
How do you develop that skill? Is that a skill you can develop, or do you want a host to just be like premise, setup, punchline? You interpret it, you rewrite it. What's the best route for this?
I would say, well, for me, it comes. I mean, I was just lucky that I'm obsessed with talk shows and with late night comedy stuff. And I think it's important that I got this advice from Robert Smigel a few months ago, where.
Nice name drop, buddy.
Well, I will name drop Robert Smigel for sure. He was like, it's very important that you write for the show. And then from the person from advice that I got from a person who works on this show, also said the fun, you have to have fun when writing this packet, and it will definitely read when reading it. And I don't think you're gonna be able to have fun writing a packet unless you're a fan of the show and know it well enough.
Were you a fan of all the shows you submitted
Absolutely
to?
Absolutely not.
Could you tell me the one that you were not a fan of? I mean, you're obviously not.
Absolutely. Even, I don't think I'm ever going to get a call back because it was such a bad submission.
What was that?
It was Ferguson.
Okay, see, this is what I want to talk about. That's my guy. You're not a Ferguson guy. Why do you think it went so poorly?
I don't know the show, so I tried catching up with the show within 2 days.
You should have asked me.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it was at a point where I was kind of just exhausted from submitting to a bunch of shows. So I did that, and the sketches were sloppy. When I had watched clips online, it was just a lot of dancing and costumes and puppets.
See, they haven't done puppets in over a year.
Okay, yeah. See, I don't watch the show, and then I watched.
They haven't done puppets in over a year, and almost. 100% of about 75% of the puppet stuff was lip syncing to public domain songs, and the other ones were just Ferguson. Usually, it'd be like the night after he accidentally swore, and the puppet would like fake apologize, and it was just essentially a monologue through a puppet. So it wasn't really a sketch. They don't do many sketches, and about 100% of the sketches either involve Ferguson and no one else, or Ferguson and one other person.
So.
Unlike pretty much every other show on late night, except maybe Letterman.
Yeah. But I just, it was hard. It was hard to learn in 2 days.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So I struggled.
But it was that writing packet was still 60 monologue, 10 sketch,
Not at all. Oh. It was I actually asked for exactly what they wanted over there because I was trying to do the bare minimum.
Understood.
There it was a page of monologue jokes. And then again, since you know his monologue is very conversational, and I had asked, I actually had to track down a comedian that I met a few years ago at Zany's, who was a writer's assistant on that show.
Who was the comedian?
His name was Matty Bates.
Matty Bates.
He's done stand up on Ferguson as well. Very funny guy and very, very nice. And I just asked him, and he was like, "Yeah, just do traditional monologue jokes," because, and this is what I've learned for also submitting to like Kimmel, is that they're looking at these monologue jokes to find out your sensibility, and to see the choices that you would make for a punchline.
Well, could you give me an example of one that you're not going to use?
Hold on, let me pull up, like, for an example from Kimmel.
No, Kimmel versus Ferguson.
Well, it was the same monologue joke.
That's perfect. Yeah, that's perfect.
Like, here's like something that's like universal, that they're gonna form this monologue joke into their own voice, but it's universal. Like something like hold on, let's pick a good one here. I'm not gonna say it's a good one. Like this one I would see on Kimmel would be: a prisoner in Florida was charged after trying to smuggle 30 items in his rectum, including a receipt from CVS. This means of the other 29 items in his butt, there was at least one he was unsure of keeping.
That's
he wouldn't say it that way, but that's like the truest and like purest form of like a traditional monologue joke.
Totally. And you'd probably like, Kimmel might say ass, Ferguson would probably say bottom, something like that.
So, and that's the thing is that, like, again, with that monologue assistant, they're going to help clean it up a little bit and make it make the joke more economical.
The reason why I like late night so much is because you're going to hear that joke. You're going to hear that premise on every single show. And Leno's going to do it the worst, and any of the other four could do it best. And every night it will change. But it seems to me that of all the voices, I think Ferguson have to be the most difficult to write for.
Yeah, I am really, like, I'm not the biggest fan of it, but it's definitely the most interesting to me and how what the process is of that.
Well, two nights ago, every single segment involved him saying how much the show was shit and he was going to get fired.
Does he do that often?
Not so much. Usually he, like, hints in it once or twice and he laughs, but this time it seemed, like, very serious. Like, fuck this, I'm tired. The following night, he seemed thrilled to be there.
He's not a fake person at all, or he won't put on an act, and he's like probably the most genuine of the talk show hosts.
That's why I dig it. You know what? Kimmel, I think, is very genuine as well.
I've heard.
And I think Fallon's just happy to be there.
Oh, my. Yeah. Fallon is just having tons of fun.
And I think that's the difference. I think, like, every one of the other hosts are kind of so beaten down.
Yeah.
They just can't have that fun anymore. Like, Letterman will have it in bursts, and it's very obvious, but it's instantly followed with anger.
I know a lot of the talk show hosts from hearing from staff and people who've worked there. They're control freaks, and I think that's how they got in that position. A lot of them do a great job of hiding it when performing. And I don't think it's a flaw that they're control freaks. It's a great thing.
I think we know that more than ever before. I mean, The War for Late Night talks about this. Every interview, Conan's talking about how much of a control freak he is. Letterman is notorious for it. It's a great thing. You kind of have
to. And it's amazing to see, like, these guys have been doing it for 15 years plus, 20 years plus, and to see someone who still, like, won't let up and cares about their job so much is amazing to me.
But it seems that Fallon isn't a control freak.
Yeah, because I think he came from SNL, and I've heard him admit it on his show quite a bit that he had difficulty writing things by himself. He's kind of accepted that, not accepted, or like just realized that the opportunity that he just got, where he got his own talk show, and is able to create his own staff, and like it's just a fun thing, and he's gonna do whatever it takes to make it a fun show.
CJ, you're a basketball
fan. I'm a huge basketball fan.
Like, to me, Fallon is like the epitome of John Stockton, or the epitome of, like, Penny Hardaway. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he really knew how to stick to these guys and be super loyal and be nice. And it's just, he's, out of any of them, probably like the, gotta be like the nicest guy in late night. Definitely not the edgiest, but definitely the happiest.
I would say,
there.
Yeah, I would say so. But again, we're catching him like 2 years in. You never know what's going to happen. But I honestly, I don't see it coming up anytime soon where he would get jaded or anything.
You know what, though? I think I don't think you could just say only 2 years in. I think it, like from the get go, the people on his writing staff, the comics that I know are on his writing staff, no offense to the host, but are way funnier than him.
Yeah, I mean, that could be the case where the host isn't the funniest person. Like, I work at Conan, and I will honestly say that Andy Richter is the funniest person in that building.
Let's get back to the monologue, actually, and let's get back to Conan. There's 60 monologue jokes, or I'm sorry, 30 monologue jokes per writer. 10 to 15 go to Conan. Mm-hmm. Does Andy know the jokes?
I don't think so.
Is Andy the only one in the entire setup going in completely cold?
No, he's at rehearsal. He knows the stuff that's going in, but I don't think he does a lot of like the joke picking. And like the rehearsal process is we have rehearsals at about 1:30 to 2 o'clock or 1:30 or 2 o'clock every day.
Could I ask a quick question here? Not about – what do they wear?
Just street clothes, just casual clothes.
Okay, that's got to be so weird to see for the first time.
Not for me, no, but I bet for a lot of other people, just because I was a comedy nerd and I would like find pictures of them rehearsing and stuff like that.
Okay, because I would, I even when I do my talk show, like I can't do rehearsals in front of anyone. I have to be in the suit, and it's a weird mental thing.
I heard from reading a lot of like interviews and articles about show business people, a lot of them wear suits no matter what because it makes them feel like they're going in for their job and they're treating it very seriously. So I think that's a great method. I know Paul Feig does it and the writers at Fallon do it as well.
They are, what do you mean? They were in suits?
From looking at pictures and stuff, like a lot of them wear suits. Like it's not mandatory, but I know a lot of the,
wait, the writers at Fallon
wear
suits.
I've seen a lot of them wear
suits.
That's
insane. Yeah. So it's the exact opposite of the Larry Sanders staff.
I would say so. And also the Larry Sanders staff only showed like,
two people.
I was like, there is no way.
One of which was Jeremy Piven 20 years ago, who looked 20 years older. Oddly
and
enough.
And then he got replaced with like Sarah Silverman. It was,
Jimmy Garofalo was there the first few seasons as the assistant producer. Yeah. I love that show, by the way.
It's
really
an incredible show.
How loyal is that? Sorry, listener, we're all over the map, but I'm enjoying this. How loyal is that to actual late night?
It is insanely, insanely accurate. It's down to the references, the Morton Steakhouse, Smokehouse, all of those references to Hank inviting like people out to certain places and referencing like streets like, I think they've mentioned like Barham, Alameda. That's this whole area down here. And then like, so I'll give you an example. Kevin, you see that episode where Kevin Nealon was just hanging out with?
No, I'm only in midway through season 2.
Okay, well, there's just this episode where Kevin Nealon is just hanging out at the show with nothing to do, just waiting for Larry to be done with the show just so he can hang out. Well, I saw that episode the same week that Kevin Nealon came to Conan and did the same exact thing. And it was blowing my mind. Like I was just sitting in the green room, and Kevin Nealon walks in, and the show's going on still. And
was Kevin Nealon even on
the
show?
No, he wasn't. I think he's been on the show once so far, this new show, but he wasn't on the show, and he wasn't like scheduled anytime soon.
That's great.
And so he's just hanging out.
Oh my god!
And he was just going up. Like if you watch the Larry Sanders episode, it's just him walking up and like kind of entertaining everyone in the room, and that's exactly what he did.
Oh my god. Was he
nice? He was super nice. He was very nice.
Was he super high?
I don't know. And see, I feel like he's a guy who could hold it together if he was high, but yet very entertaining and So yeah, that blew my mind.
Okay, so let's go back to the show. The guys are doing their 20 to their 30 minute to an hour rehearsal. They're in street clothes.
Yeah, no, they do it's about an hour. It starts at 1:30 or 2 o'clock and it can last from an hour to 2 hours.
Why would it ever go 2 hours? Is it a complicated sketch? Jokes aren't working. Why would it ever take that long?
For several reasons. One could be the writers felt really good that day and they have a lot of things that they pitched and want to put up and show. There could be a lot of videos. There could be a complication in the costume or just a number of things where it could go about 2 hours.
When you say videos, how often do you guys incorporate videos, and what is it, good or bad? Does it feel like cheating?
For me personally, I'm not a fan of videos. But
let's clarify. We're not talking about filmed skits.
Like pre-tape.
We're talking about like YouTube stuff.
Yeah,
now.
I'm not a fan of that, to be honest.
Okay. Your show, Late Live Show, used to do, and still does, I think at least one sketch or skit that's pre-filmed.
Yeah, we do a pre-taped sketch.
That's okay, but that's different to you.
Yeah, I mean, because it's original content. It's not mm-hmm. like riffing on a viral video. That's the thing where I kind of cringe a bit.
Yeah, I think certain shows it works. I hate it when Ferguson does it. I love it when Fallon does it, especially the Real Housewives yeah. ones when it's all okay. That's the best. Anytime Kimmel does it, it's totally hit or miss. Yeah, I understand what you're saying on this. And Conan, I think that was probably his best Tonight Show. Stuff.
Yeah, he's doing it a lot now.
It's so much
there
better.
There are guys who that's their job is to come up with these viral videos and edit them or like doctor them for comedy.
Do you think that's helpful or pointless, or is it a completely separate part of the show, like a completely separate entity?
It helps to the general public. There are some people who don't necessarily like me, for instance. I don't mind it, but I like other routes. I think.
What do you mean other routes?
I'll take a monologue joke over a video any
really?
Day. Yeah, I don't know. It's just me being. I think that's me just having pride in being a writer.
What do you think about the video intros or outros when it's at the end or the beginning of an interview? What about that?
Oh, just like presenting a guest?
Yeah, but it's not like, I'm not talking about clips here. I'm just talking about like quick 10 to 15 second videos that they just tack in.
What do you mean, bumpers? Like,
kind of, but like, you know how the Fallon does what is exploding and then like the thing, or not Fallon, sorry, Kimmel has like the watermelon exploding and then it comes back into the watermelon? Stuff like that.
I think.
Or occasionally Letterman will have like 30 Spider-Mans in a frozen yogurt stand, like when you could just tack it on.
Yeah, those are called bumpers, and those are cool. Those are cool. Conan, they do a lot. Those are like a part of the rehearsal where they pitch those as well.
Oh, okay.
I prefer the late night ones because those are like they showed like artwork, and then yeah, for the new show, it's kind of cool. They have a lot of fan ones. They have a lot of like.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about the artwork. I'm talking about pre-planned bits that are like 10 to 15 seconds.
I mean, they don't do those on Conan.
I know they don't do them on Conan, but they do them on other shows.
Yeah, I guess I'm not familiar with the other shows then.
Okay. That was a weird tangent. Yeah. I apologize. We're all over the map here.
No, I think
here.
This is... I'm feeling like if I heard this stuff not interning anywhere, I'd be like, my mind would be blown because this is some insider information.
Well, it's weird because I'm trying to... I'm really relating all of this to both of our shows. Totally different, completely different. And I really do want to close with a pitch to you. I've pitched CJ and I have known each other for a few years now. And I really wanted to do this with him and it never happened because we both moved. But I want to try to figure out a time when we're going to both be in the same city. And I'm dead set on this. And I will close the interview with this whenever we close it. And it has nothing to do with talk shows. So don't worry.
All right.
Okay. Let's go back to the rehearsal. You do sometimes it's an hour, sometimes it's two. These people are pitching. Do tempers ever get flared up? Is it a super relaxing situation? Is the full band there? Is Andy there?
Everyone is there.
Everyone are the guests.
The guests
there?
Aren't there. The guests get in about a half hour before the show starts.
Why is that?
I think that's just because of their schedule. They can't spend a whole day there. The band, the musical guest is there all day.
Because they have a sound check.
They have
a
sound check
at
about 10 in the morning.
Jesus Christ. Is that necessary?
It is with the schedule, the way it works over at Conan, it is.
Okay. Could you tell me the easiest band to work with and the hardest band to work with? Not be just really quickly.
I don't work with the bands. But I mean, the best band that I saw or the best artist I saw was Jack White and Wanda Jackson when they came in.
Just because it was quick, they knew what they were doing. They didn't care. Like Jack's worked with Conan before.
And Cheap Trick, there was a guitarist came in and he was just like jamming with Conan during rehearsal.
Rick Nielsen.
Yeah. I don't know him.
You're not a big music fan.
I am, but only of like five bands.
Well, who do you like? Radiohead?
No, continue. I like Wilco. I like.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, that's half your goddamn wardrobe. I forgot.
But yeah, we won't talk about that. That's not interesting.
Fair enough. Let's go back even further from the conversation. I'm sorry about this, buddy. Monologue writers versus sketch writers. Okay. You got six monologue people at Conan. How many sketch people are at Conan?
Okay, let me try to count this. They have Todd Levin, Andre Dubuchet, Dan Crone.
Wait, why do I know Todd Levin?
Todd Levin is a he's a stand-up from New York. He has a lot of comedy pieces that were published in a lot of respectable literature magazines like McSweeney's, stuff like that. He's just a really well-respected comedian from New York who ended up getting in. So, there's Todd Levin, Andre Dubuchet, Dan Cronin, Matt O'Brien, Brian Stack, Brian McCann, and is that it?
So you got six people again. The two are any of those people the people we always see, like Preparation H. Raymond? Isn't that one of the
Brian McCann.
Okay, and I know the other guy that plays the old-timey ghost racist, that's another Brian,
That's Brian Stack, who is the nicest guy you'll ever meet in comedy.
And a lot of these guys are Second City guys, right?
Brian and Brian both came from Second City in I.O.
Not to rip on Conan anymore, but are these guys funnier than Conan? Because from an outsider's perspective, I would say yes.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Okay. I'm not trying to knock Conan here. I just find their humor very up.
They
my
also
style.
Don't have as much pressure on them.
What's the schedule like? I'm assuming it's not 60 jokes or 30 jokes
for
a day.
Them. They have longer hours sometimes because they have meetings after the show sometimes to either prepare for the next day or for future shows or to discuss like an edit in the show. Or, kind of just to recap that the day of or the day is coming up.
Okay.
So they tend to work longer hours.
And that's kind of the job you want.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to work both, but I think sketch is a little more exciting to me. And
because your goal, we talked about this a few shows ago, you want to be on SNL.
Yeah. I would love to, I just love the schedule and the format.
You like the turnover.
Yeah.
You like the yes. But do you want to be a writer or a performer?
Or
are they one and the same?
I want to be a performer, but I know that being a performer is going to take nailing writing, I think.
Okay. Are you a better performer because you know how to write?
Absolutely.
Did you ever do improv?
Yeah,
Chicago?
I did improv for a year and a half.
Is that how you got into Second City and New
Orleans? I moved to Chicago for the one reason that I got into a program called Comedy Studies, which was a semester long. It was like a semester abroad where you study nothing but comedy at Second City.
Okay, was that worth it?
It was probably one of the best, if not the best, thing I've ever done in comedy. Or just
why is that?
Because. You come in for 4 days a week for 8 hours a day and you just talk nothing about comedy and you perform comedy and it's just the one thing on your brain and you meet like-minded people. Like I met a lot of the staff and a lot of people that I collaborate with from Comedy Studies.
Mm-hmm.
And
how much is that class?
It costs as much as a semester of college.
Jesus Christ. But you say it's worth it.
It's like I said, it's probably the best decision I've ever made in my career so far.
You should be a spokesperson for Second City.
Well, if you look on the Comedy Studies website, I am in the alumni section.
Wow, you made it.
And actually, there's a giant quote on the front page from me as well.
Who else has gone through this program?
Andrew Smirker, Joe Quazala.
No. Not like anyone that we would know. I'm not knocking Andrew and Joe. If you listen to the show, you know them. But
we were the second ever class to go.
Oh, so
this is
new.
This started in fall or spring of 2007 was the first incarnation of it.
Okay. Do you think you could have done what you're doing in the spring of 2007, or did you need those 5 years of aging to be better?
Wait, what are you asking? I'm sorry.
How old are you now? You're 25 24. Now? You're 24. You were 19 when you took that class.
Yes. No, I was 20.
You were 20 when you took that class. Could you be doing what you're doing now then?
No. not.
Why?
Those teachers actually are big influences on the way I am today.
How is it different than a stand-up class?
Because stand-up classes are... let's see. I don't think you could teach stand-up. And I wasn't... like, and I necessarily wasn't learning how to be a comedian at this place. I was learning discipline and taking things seriously that I actually cared about.
Could you have learned that without the class?
No, absolutely not, because...
Why is that?
Because... I was paying. I mean, I was in a college. I was in a college environment, and I was having these people who I respected because they're from Second City, you know, calling me out on my shittiness, and making me realize certain things about myself that I don't think I would take from a stand-up comedian who hasn't made it. Like, these people at Second City have found a position. Like, they love teaching. This is their only job. Like, I know stand-up teachers who it's their only job, but not by choice. It's because they're a comedian.
Got it.
Like, these teachers and instructors genuinely cared about, you know, the people that they're teaching and in their job. So,
could you ever teach this class?
Yeah, I would love to.
You would even be able to teach 19-year-olds to think they're funny?
Yeah, because I don't think it's necessarily teaching them how to be funny. It's teaching them to, yeah, there's a discipline that needs to be taught to a lot of comedians.
What is one thing you could impart to the listener that they should just know as a sketch improviser, stand-up, just a fan? What should they do?
What should they
or not
I
do?
I would say that... like, you can, like, shit happens in comedy and terrible things like not getting a job or having a bad show or stuff like that. And it could be the worst thing ever. Like, you can bomb for 2 hours straight and no one laugh at you, but it's way better than any other thing you're ever going to do. And if
what do you mean?
It's way better than an office job. It's way better than, it's way better than any of that. And if you keep doing that, the ratio changes to where you're doing well more than you're doing bad, to the point where someone's going to see that and hire you, and you're going to be in that job that you've always wanted. And not, you know, there's just like recently, there's just a lot of people who are talking to me about quitting, and like even I was questioning myself and wanting to do stuff. But mm-hmm. then I just realized I don't want to be doing anything else. And yeah, I wouldn't want to live in the rest of my life in regret that I didn't continue pursuing this.
When you first moved, let's say I talked to you in December, what would you have said the exact opposite?
No, I've always said that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I knew LA was going to be tough, but I also, if I was to leave LA, it wouldn't be to quit comedy. It would be to take care of my comedy.
Okay. So you still want to do that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, more than ever, it's just getting more real, and I have to be more careful and kind of, and not act like I know everything.
Do you feel like you did act like you knew everything?
I think I knew more than some people while in Chicago.
Give me an example.
Like, I mean, I have a manager, and I have, and I'm getting submitted on jobs, and I felt...
By the way, do you have an agent?
No, I don't have an agent.
What's the difference?
I believe the agent is more committed and more exclusive in like writing as well. Contract, I think they're contract based as well, and they get I think they're more reputable in the business. Like, if your
agents are more reputable than managers?
I believe.
Okay.
And yeah, I think that's the only real difference. And it's a mandatory 10% to them. I think it could be negotiated mm-hmm. with managers, but for the most part, from what I hear, 10% still goes to the manager.
So if you had an agent and a manager, you would just lose 20%.
I think so, or it gets worked out a different way. But I mean, I think I get a job with just a manager, I'm lucking out. I think a lot of the times everyone has a manager and an agent.
Okay. So, this is exciting to learn about. Sorry.
No,
actually.
I mean, this is all very new to me as well.
But you said, like, that's not something you knew that other people didn't know in Chicago.
No, I mean, I know how to talk to the right people, but I knew how the business worked, but I don't know everything. And I
when you say talk to the right people, what do you mean?
Talk to the people at like the right step of my career. Like, if I want to be a writer, who I should be talking to and who I shouldn't be talking to.
who shouldn't you
I don't
be
think
talking
anyone
to?
Who's not ready shouldn't be talking to head writers or you know, be talking to writers in general.
Maybe you should say they shouldn't be pitching to writers, but it's okay to
talk
to writers.
And I think you should only be talking to people you're fans of, you're genuinely fans of.
So you should not have been talking to the Ferguson people.
I think I wasted their time. And that was me of just kind of just like clawing for work in LA.
Got it. I really hope that I'm in LA that week you move. It might happen.
Who knows?
Probably not. But it might.
Who knows
me,
if I move to New York? But
well, okay, whatever. Fuck you. You're gonna be great. You are obsessed with comedy. Yes. I know I was in your room in Chicago before you left, and how most people would have, most 24, 23-year-olds would have, like, random stuff on their walls. Everything was comedy-based for you.
I had a Wilco poster on there.
To me, that's hilarious. And you also, I know this, did you read the Apatow book?
Skipped through it because I had already read the Look Well pilot, and I kind of got bored in some of the dramatic stuff, but...
That's where we're totally different. I enjoyed the dramatic pieces way more. The Look Well pilot's good, but you can tell. We were talking about the Conan pilot starring Adam West. Was that ever shot?
Yes, it was, and you can watch it on YouTube, and it's really funny.
I it's interesting, but you can tell Conan had developed his voice quite early.
Yeah, and I think that's because he was surrounded by people who shared the same sensibility.
Are you enjoying that you're not surrounded by your Chicago people in LA, but you are via Google Docs and you could still work on the show? Is that helping you or is that kind of keeping you back?
I would say, I don't know. I do miss working with them a ton, but I think out of our group of friends and we all plan on helping each other out, like one of us had to make the move and one of us has to push us forward.
Okay. So do you still have groupthink when it comes to this stuff?
Yeah, I do consulting for them, I would say.
That's cool. That's great. That's I think a lot. I think that's what stand up is. I know this sounds so preachy, but it's true. I think a lot of stand up is missing what a lot of sketch and improv people have, and that's just like, I don't know, support.
Yeah, I would say that. But there's still a great amount of support in stand up, and there are certain decisions that where you can't. I think it goes for everything. But there's certain decisions where you just have to stick to your gut, even when people tell you that you're wrong. Like, I could tell you, for one thing, there was a sketch that I used to pitch called Cash Steamroller. It's a parody of Cash Cab. Instead of a cab, it's a steamroller. And I thought it was the funniest thing ever. And I would pitch it to people in Chicago and sketch and stand up. And it was really dumb. It's a really dumb idea. And I kind of forgot about it, but when it came to submitting a lot of these sketches to shows, that I used it in there just because I wanted to get across that I was having fun in writing these sketches. And that is the most talked about sketch.
Is it really?
Yeah, by people that I submit to.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so I mean, you really do have to stick to your gut. Like, you really have to ask yourself, is this something I really think is funny? And if you think it is, then stick to it. But the support is there, but you still have to, when it comes down to it, it has to be your decision.
It's so positive. We should end there. I'm serious. Here's my pitch to CJ. I think, I don't know if we ever talked about this on the show. This is happening, buddy. I don't know if it's going to happen in DC, Chicago, New York, LA. It's going to happen. And here's what hear me out. Two meetings.
Okay.
Or two things. One, the first one is a writing session.
Okay.
It might take an hour, it might take 80, it might take 20.
In a row?
We are within each other's...
In a row?
What?
20? Yeah. Okay.
It won't take that long, trust me. This might take 30 minutes to do this, but I'm convinced it will be brilliant. We are going to write and block, and for the stage, we're going to do Wayne's World 3.
Oh, yes. I love this.
We're doing this, but it's very dramatic.
Yeah, I would love to do that.
We're doing Wayne's World 3. The second time is when we stage
it. Okay.
Preferably, you and I are not the actors.
Sure.
I would love to get some hungry 21-year-old dudes in here that think that this is very dramatic.
I think Kevin Lee as Garth.
Kevin Lee will be every other character. We're just going to get like 30 wigs and we'll just throw them in there. I'm not joking. We're going to do Wayne's World 3.
That sounds great. I think we did talk about this or something.
We've talked about this, and it's going to be super dramatic. It's going to be like the Third Man dramatic. Like, did you ever see that film, Orson Welles? No. Third Man with starring Orson Welles. It's like 1946.
No, I would not see that movie.
Okay, we're different people. It's going to be super heavy. And it's going to be a lot about heroin abuse and suicide attempts, unwanted pregnancies, questionable birth certificates. Just it's going to be intense.
I love that idea. I mean, yeah, I had an idea before I was leaving. We were going to do a stage version of Happy Gilmore that was produced 45 minutes before the show. Well, we were going to have, I was going to get a cast of like 30 people, and they were all going to have to watch the movie at 8 o'clock, and then we would have to block it before midnight. That was the plan.
Did I tell you I did an Empire record?
Yeah,
reading?
And you were Rex?
No, I was every
character.
Oh, you
were?
I did a one-man staged reading of Empire record.
That's great. Yeah, I like
that. People could listen to it. It was fantastic.
I like that type of stuff a ton.
We're going to do it. All right, buddy. Let's try to do one of these again soon. Congratulations on the interview. Hopefully it pans out.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
And sooner or later, we'll see Cash Steamroller on
television.
It'll
be my huge fuck you wave to so many people.
That will be it?
Yeah, just some shitty sketch. Just being like, fuck you, people. I can make shitty television, too.
I think, I don't know why, I envision Chris Elliott being the driver in that.
Yeah, I tend to have, Chris Elliott will be in a lot of, in my head a lot when I write sketches.
That's going to be an ugly, ugly head. Let's plug your friends or your show, whatever you want to call it, their show tomorrow.
Yeah, the Late Live Show tomorrow night. Guest Shawnee Davis and the band, I forget what the band is tomorrow.
Canasta.
Yeah.
Canasta. You would like them. They've opened for Wilco.
Oh, great. Yeah, they're a big Chicago band, right? Okay.
I mean, the fact that they've been on the show, they're good people, but I don't know. I don't know if you'd call them big. They're nice people, and they play pretty music.
That's good. My favorite band still that performed on the show is Gold Motel, and that's like who I tell everyone to listen to.
They're good. I like them. Okay. Post Honeymoon's going to be playing my Chicago show on Easter. They're great. They're a two piece. You guys should get them for the late.
Oh well,
show.
Yeah. Talk to Joe. You and Joe need to talk more. Joe should be on the show at some point. Just Joe.
Joe insulted me on the show and opened up Pandora's box of pain. That's what happened.
Well, then you guys need...
You were there.
Well, you guys need to make up.
I don't need to do
shit. He's a great comedy mind and a mind that's a lot different than mine. That's a lot.
Joe and I have completely different minds.
That's why you should tackle that. You should...
Wait, fuck that. Have me go on your show.
That's a good point. Yeah, maybe that's down the line.
Yeah. What the fuck? I'm only the one flying across country all the time.
I will talk to them about it.
Yeah, we'll do competing. Well, we are going to do Sábado Gigante on June, the last Saturday in June. I'm going to have all the hosts and all the other former guests, and we're going to have a big 12-hour marathon podcast, and Joe is definitely invited to
that. That's awesome. But yeah, we'll get...
be fun. Hopefully you're in town, man. You might be in town. June 26th or something. You don't know your schedule, man. Don't count anything.
Yeah, no, I have no idea. We'll see what happens.
And all I'm saying is New York's a lot cheaper flight than LA to Chicago.
Yeah.
So it might happen. All right, buddy. Check out CJ, friend him on Facebook or Twitter. Do you care about any of that stuff right now or no?
Not really.
All right, don't do anything. Just give me money. My bike was stolen yesterday.
What?
So I could have...
You didn't mention that. That's awful.
Yeah, it is. Well, that's not fun.
Yeah, give him money. Do you have a PayPal donation?
I do have a PayPal account through the website. Money would be awfully kind. It was stolen outside of the Smithsonian.
Is it? What?
I was vigorously biking to make it on time to see Gaslight, a classic 1944 film starring Ingrid Bergman. And I leave, and it's gone. And there are two security guards there just both looking at their phones.
Wow. Is the Pee-wee bike in the Smithsonian?
No, it's not. And I was at the Portrait Gallery, and you're thinking about the American Artifact type thing. I highly recommend doing both.
I was at the Museum of Television and Radio yesterday, and it was great.
Oh, I gotta go to that.
In New York,
right?
I was watching all these old Conans, so.
Oh, great. That sounds actually like YouTube, so I don't know if I need to go anymore. All right, thanks for listening, everybody, and have a wonderful evening.
Follow us on Twitter at YMTE. Friend us on Facebook at facebook.com/youmethemeverybody. And for details on Monday and Tuesday nights at the Hungry Brain, go to youmethemeverybody.com.